Hi, everybody. I'm glad to be here. My name is Eric Stromquist. I'm currently based in Portland, Oregon, on the west coast of the United States. I know we have some international visitors here. So my title, I'm the chairman of a company called CTL, and I was with the organization for nearly 30 years, and most recently was CEO, and then just about 4 months ago, I moved to a chairman role, and the company was sold in 2021, so I led the company for a number of years, and then we exited the business, and I'm still helping in this chairman role, and you know, excited to talk to you guys today, answer your questions, tell a bit of my story, of course, and see if it's interesting to you, and then see how, you know, I can be helpful to you guys around the world.
It will be absolutely interesting. So can I jump right in some student questions I got emailed me?
Yeah, let's go.
So these kids read about your bio, and one of our international kids emailed me. They wanted to know, how did your experience as a CPA help you in the tech industry?
Well, that's a good question. I think I'm still a CPA, actually, and I just renewed my license. I think if you have an accounting background, then you understand how everything fits together. And I think that's important when you lead an organization to have an understanding how all the pieces fit. And if you have a financial understanding, particularly how everything works and functions and mechanically operates, from when you sell something, when you buy something, when a salesperson interacts, and the costs and all the structure, and ultimately how that flows to your profit and loss statement and your balance sheet, I think it's a great foundation for future leaders. Now, not everyone wants to be a CPA, and it has the reputation of being very boring, and taxes and journal entries and balance sheets. And that's, you know, that's true in many cases. However, it is a mechanical function. And the more you know about how it all pieces together, it allows you to be a strong leader and understand what all your reports are doing and how it flows through to the financial performance of the firm. And then you start viewing the world a little bit in pluses and minuses. Like, you see how the impact of one thing creates an impact of another. So it's not for everybody, but I think it's a good background. And if you wanted to get into business leadership, I think having that experience is really good for future leaders.
One of our kids, they want to know, can you explain the role of chief community officer?
Oh, yeah, sure. So X-Phase is a new project of mine, and it's, you know, there's a lot of change in industry right now. And many people are leaving big enterprise, for example. And you guys know that I was CEO for CTL for a long time and now I'm chairman. But a lot of my friends left Intel, retired, or Nike or Google or various large enterprises around the country. And what we all do together is we work on various projects. So it's more of a cooperative arrangement. And so I view myself as a facilitator of business amongst peers in the industry and helping work on projects. So I view it as more of not an enterprise commercially, but more of as a community. And that seems to resonate well with participants. I think a lot of people want to be part of something. And the community element kind of changes it from a commercial enterprise to more of like a support group. And then business kind of comes naturally through that. So that's why I call it the chief community officer versus a CEO or an economic interest, because it's really community-based. So that's the story there.
And it sounds a lot more friendly too.
Yeah, it sounds like I'm, it's more like a nonprofit, which it's not. But I think that, you know, at this stage in my career, in my life, that I'm more interested in helping people and collaborating with people to find interesting things to do versus the economic interests. And my belief is that economics kind of follow. If you do good things, money flows. So I'm not too worried about that at this stage. But, you know, it's different for everybody.
Would you say that it's kind of like a follow your passions kind of thing, and then everything else will fall into place to an extent?
I think so. I mean, I think that's what everybody is probably seeking, right? And that, you know, what you're passionate about, if you could turn that into a career, if you could turn your hobbies into a career, then that's really the utopia, because it becomes fun versus an obligation, right? So I think at this stage for me, especially with the X Phase project and the community, and of course CTL too, that it's more about interest than economics, in many cases. So the X Phase project is related to that.
And we'll talk a little bit more about the X Phase project in a little bit. I wanted to go kind of chronological order because I knew from the CTL days. And I had a kid ask, and they wanted to know what were some of the challenges when it came to seeing CTL grow from what it started to being in what you guys are over 55 countries now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a long story. CTL's been around for 30 something years. It started in the late 80s, and I wasn't the original founder. I became a co-founder in the 90s. So, you know, obviously for you guys on the call, that's a long time ago. But it was founded by a guy named David Kim. He was an immigrant from South Korea, could barely speak English, really. And he had an idea to start assembling computers. And like many people in the 90s, all the big brands you probably know, like Dell and Gateway, maybe you might know, and of course, a lot of the guys got their start in the 80s or in 90s, and CTL was one of those companies. And there's a lot. That was a big industry and a big growth trajectory for the United States, and particularly PC brands around the world. And what was different about CTL is that, because of David's experience coming from South Korea, he was very interested in owning the supply chain. And that was a very Korean way of thinking at the time. If you think about Samsung or LG or Hyundai, they like to own every bit of the process. And even at one time, Samsung was wanting to build cars because they felt like they would be good at it, just because they own beginning to end. But through his contacts and relationships with South Korea at the time in the 90s, CTL started becoming a branding company, an OEM company. And OEM means that we start outsourcing production and then importing, et cetera. So we started working with the Koreans early on, mostly Samsung, LG, Daewoo, Hyundai, some brands you may know, some are no longer around. But and all those are considered chaebols, which is like kind of a conglomerate. And even Samsung today is still considered a chaebol. That means, like, you know, Samsung and LG probably together are 40% of Korea's economy, right? So David really kind of had this vision of CTL being a branding company and getting to peripherals like monitors and motherboards and things in and around the computer system, and then of course final assembling it. And so when I started working with David, you know, that was something that he believed in strongly, and I kind of attached to that as well. So I started learning the OEM business early in my career. And of course, you guys remember I'm an accounting guy, and then but I'm also a sales guy too. So I started learning that, and then over so we started building monitors, which were displays. And David's belief, and I shared it to some extent, that you always needed a good viewing experience because you interact with the computer through the screen. So his thesis was that if you get involved in the screen, there's always a marketplace because people need a good visual experience with the computers. So that put us in the monitor space, LCDs ultimately, when those started happening in the late 90s, and then later in the television space, actually. But as the market changed, and in 1998, there was a big economic crisis in Asia, and particularly Korea got hit very hard. So a lot of those brands I just mentioned, particularly Daewoo, a lot of them went out of business, and they had to reach to the IMF for financial support in the global community. But that kind of shifted CTL's supply chain to Taiwan, and Taiwan is really emerging as the dominant player at that time. And the market was also moving to notebooks and mobile at the time as well. So that's when kind of David's connections kind of started to wane, and I started taking over. And started working with the Taiwanese organizations. And you probably don't know any of these brands, but or these names, but they're behind most of the IT sector. And we're talking about companies like Quanta, Compal, Inventec, names you've never heard of before, but that are the dominant, and still today, are the dominant players, a company called Pegatron as well. So I started working with them in 2000, and CTL built our first notebook then. And that was a big change in CTL's kind of trajectory as we started moving to a notebook-centric market. And obviously, even to today, that's still CTL's main business is the mobile portable space. But so in the 2000s, we started doing that, and that led to some other things I mentioned that CTL got involved in, the high definition television game. And probably everybody on this call has a HD TV and LCD TV. I mean, it's been around for a long time now, but back then people had tube TVs, right? And there was the FCC was mandating that everybody switch to the different network, basically, that it was mandated you had to have a digital way to accept signals. So that really created an opportunity, and the whole United States had to basically move their technology to digital. And Ralph, I don't know how old were you were then, but you essentially had to buy a plasma TV with what's called an ATSC tuner. It was legislated. So that, obviously we all changed and everybody bought tons and tons and tons of TVs. So it was the Wild West. All kinds of brands emerged, including us. So we had a brand called Nexus. And because we were already in the Taiwan ecosystem, many of those Taiwan players were building televisions. So that started a new trajectory for CTO. We started building televisions, started building a channel, getting into retail. So we had this kind of like fork in the road where we had this new business expanding in the HD television game. And meanwhile, we're still working on the notebook section. And the trend back then, and we're talking about 2007, 2006 era, going back nearly 20 years, but we started to see one-to-one computing be a thing. And Intel was really incubating this, and they had something called the Classmate PC project. And I don't know, most of you on the call have no idea about this. Maybe Ralph, you do. But Classmate PC project was a small computer. It was running Windows or Ubuntu in those days. And they're relatively inexpensive. They were purpose-built for education. They were rugged. They had a carry handle. They had a bunch of things. So Intel was investing a lot of money in the space, trying to incubate one-to-one computing. And of course, it was in Intel's best interest because the more students had devices, that's more chips that Intel could sell. So it was kind of a spin-off of what's called OLPC, which is one laptop per child project out of MIT. And those guys made a low-cost portable computer. They didn't choose Intel processor, and Intel and OLPC kind of broke up, and Intel decided to take on that market themselves and destroy OLPC. And they did, of course. And CTL started building these devices. We were early on. We were the first, I think, in North America. So that put a square in the education space. And that business really took off. It was they were starting schools were starting to consider think about how does it work? How do you charge them? How do you get an all-day battery life? But of course you had Windows on top of it, which was, very bloated OS, difficult to manage, very high overhead in terms of performance, et cetera. So it was still taking off, and Intel was incubating this idea. And CTL was one of the leaders in that space, although it was much smaller than today. And then you had the iPad come along in 2010, which was an elegant device, made a lot of sense, relatively low cost. So that almost killed the Intel's initiative because the iPad was well adopted by schools in 2010. And so it put a big threat to what was happening from Intel on a one-to-one. And it was a great device with long battery life and such, things like that. So that kind of, put a pause on that business. It wasn't growing as much. CTL's making televisions. And then we started hearing whispers of Chrome OS in the market from Google. And Google had an experimental project called the CR48, which was the first Chromebook that they gave to schools, and it was well received. And this was 2011. So you're talking really the end of that little one-to-one PC era that was starting to happen, the iPad coming in very strong, and then the whispers of Chrome OS, and which was designed to be relatively low cost, low overhead, easy to manage device, and everything in the cloud, which was a unique situation. And Google approached it, and Ralph, tell me when to stop at any time, because I'm still, you know, I'm still in the 2010 era.
You're good. So, I mean, you're deep in the weeds, but it's good though, because this is part of, world history, because this is you're essentially laying the groundwork to what these kids are used to. They're all used to one-to-one, and it didn't come out of nowhere. And so if you want to touch on like kind of that phase where it's that one-to-one and then now like the video conferencing, and if you can segue into why you started why with X-Phase kind of
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, so I mean, you know, to kind of abbreviate what happened there. So the schools liked the idea of Chrome OS, but Google was looking at a cellular connection, and it was a lease recurring revenue model. So they had a lot of things wrong early on, but schools said, hey, this is great because Windows is too difficult to manage. We like the idea of just putting in your username and changing it. That's a scalable business for us. So schools responded really favorably. I don't think Google expected that. So then they're like, oh my God, these schools love Chrome OS. Let's keep going down that path. So in 2012, they had a Samsung device that was highly received from schools and Acer. There were only two OEMs. So we raised our hand, or I raised our hand and said, hey, I want in. And Google's like, okay, let's see what happens. Let's wait and blah, blah, blah. So ultimately in 2013, we were able to design a device with Google. And we took the same stuff we had been doing with the handle and rotating camera and all this stuff that educators liked and put it into Chrome OS. So it was very well received. So CTO really pivoted. We actually sold off our TV division at that time because that business was cresting and on the way down. So we sold our brand name and did really well in that transaction, and then started going all in on Chrome. And so that was 2013 or so. And to our surprise, of course, people, customers responded like really favorably to that, and our business took off. And then we continued on that, and then started expanding into other areas of Chrome OS, started adding a lot of services. And Ralph knows that we met each other in about 2015, 2016, when the state of Nevada was incubating one-to-one computing. And their strategy was to, it's not about the device, it's not about the cost, it's about the whole solution. So they said, hey, tell me what it is to manage, to sell, service, train, get our teachers involved, get a comprehensive support program where we de-risk the schools from even repairing them. And CTL come up with a plan to do that. And so we did. CTL, HP, and Apple all proposed this NR21 solution to for the opportunity, and they chose CTL. So we had a pretty comprehensive solution, and then that's where we met Ralph, and he was doing some really innovative things at that time, which we thought were cool, especially on video. And so this became a thing, right? And then and it was publicly funded, and it had all the components of success, and I think it was a success, and we saw scores go up and things like that. So CTO was one of the first to do this in a large scale environment. Also, the state of Maine was pretty aggressive in this space too. A CIO named Jeff Mao, so he was kind of a precursor to this. And so the state of Maine was very advanced in one-to-one computing. Early on, way ahead of everybody else. Nevada kind of followed. And now, of course, today we have everybody doing it. But anyway, CTL kind of branched out into other Chrome OS projects. Chrome boxes, which were like a mini PC version. And then we saw the advancement of video. And Google always had something called Google Meet, which was around. And Meet is essentially, we're using Zoom today, but Meet is an alternative to that. And they would come up with these meeting rooms, essentially. So you'd buy a kit, camera, compute device, et cetera. And it'd run a special forked version of Chrome OS called Meet OS, essentially. So we started building those boxes for Logitech in 2019 and partnering with Logitech to bring these solutions to the market. And that put us direct hit on all this international expansion. So we'd always been in Europe through Spain, selling Chromebooks, but this put us into commercial accounts. selling these Google Meeting room solutions. So when we talk about CTL being in 55 countries, we are mostly through this project with Logitech. And in fact, Google themselves buys our solution for their own meeting rooms. So that was happening in 2019. So you had Chrome OS growing like crazy. You had all these Chrome peripherals growing. And then you have the Google. We had one computing rising step by step, right? Back then at trade shows, you'd hear schools like, oh, we're going 1-to-1, we're going 1-to-1. I'm like, okay. And then what happened in 2020? Schools had to shut down and send people home. And then Chrome OS, of course, went from 14 million units a year in North America to doubling overnight, essentially, because everybody needed them. And schools were forced to go 1-to-1 against their will in many cases. So they had to figure it out. And they did, some more successfully than others. But if you take Nevada, for example, they were already doing it. They already knew how to function and deal with it. So, because they had worked on that in 2014. So some fared better than others. But nevertheless, we got to nearly 100% device to student penetration in 2022. So it took a couple years, but 100% of kids had access to computers on a 1-to-1 nationally. So, pretty impressive. So going back to all the way in 2008, Google's or Intel's vision, it didn't really be realized until a pandemic happened and, 15 years later in 2022. So that's where we are today. Well, we got to 1-to-1, but now the things are changing a little bit. Maybe students can, comment on this. Schools are kind of pulling back on 1-to-1 because of the administrative overhead to manage them with 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds taking computers home. They're damaging them at such a rate that the schools can't keep up and they don't have the infrastructure to handle that. Now, we addressed that in Nevada because we took the responsibility for all those things. So we could handle the damage rates and they were high. But now schools just don't have the resources to do that. So they're pulling back. They're starting to put them in carts again. We're seeing the 1-to-1 ratio drop. I don't know what it is, but it's in the 90s or even 85 because we're going back to carts. So the 1-to-1 system's kind of getting dismantled to some degree to perhaps a more sustainable way. I'm not sure. And then you're seeing devices stay in classrooms a lot longer because of economics. So, and Google's extended the lifespan of these things, but we're seeing these devices last a lot longer. So that presents another challenge economically and how to manage those things. So there's a lot of things going on from just sustainability point of view in the business. And so CTL's in all those things, right? Because those are our customers, how to manage devices, how to successfully deploy them, but also sustain them for the long term. And that brings us up to really today. And CTL is starting to invest heavily in the circular space. That means how do we manage our customers' life cycle beyond just the original purchase? How do we deal with their trade-ins? How do we deal with the refurbishing side? How do we support the reuse and also the life cycle management and how to repair and reuse devices to make them last longer. So that's a big investment area for CTL because there is a lot of movements like the right to repair movement and a lot of sustainability initiatives that are important for these electronic devices and the environment. So we became a B Corp. That was one of the things that before I moved out of the CEO role, I completed. And then B Corp is like a commitment to sustainability and the stakeholders. So that's kind of CTL's platform in the future is growing not only in Chrome OS internationally, but also sustainability and the reuse market. So I'm still active in that space and helping from a board seat. And then, of course, I talked to you about the XPhase project, which was really just a derivative of me and other things I like to do and people I like to work with. And so who knows where that's going to go, but we have a lot of exciting things in the works there.
That's really cool. We'll keep you for a few more minutes. Is that cool?
Yeah, sure, anytime. I'm good.
So, one of the kids had emailed me and they want to know what qualities do you think make a successful business leader?
Well, I mean, I think perseverance is probably one. I think looking back, so going the thinking about a long, a lot of people switch jobs and careers a lot, right? And that's a thing today. I think sticking with things and having a long-term vision is helpful because, it's like the tortoise and the hare situation. Like if you stick to it, you generally win the race. So I think perseverance, I think open-mindedness, I think creativity, and collaboration and problem-solving attitudes. And what you learn is that every organization's got their problems. And when I spend time with new companies and old companies and even CTL, they've all got their issues, right? So thinking that someone else won't have issues is probably not the right mindset. I think you need to say, how can we solve these problems? How can we solve them sustainably? Because if you just give up and just move to something else, you're going to see the same things or different problems or even larger problems. So I think determination is something that you should really think about. And this goes, Ralph and I are both runners. We've done long distance running. And that's really hard, but it's a good example of perseverance and sticking to it and training. And it's not a financial reward. You don't get any money for it. Even if you place first in some of these marathons, you get like $50 or something. But it shows that you can do it and you deal with the tough, running a marathon. There's a lot of tough moments in that race or a half marathon or even a short distance that you question yourself and you question your commitment to what you're doing and you have doubts and you have so many things along the way, but you push through those things and then get to the finish line and then you feel a sense of accomplishment. So it's very applicable to life too and your career that you're it's just like those things, but there is a reward at the end.
A lot of intrinsic motivation, it sounds like right there. It's good. What for our final question, because I gotta get to our next speaker. And guys, we'll have this release, the podcast of this release next week, along with the student assignments to go along with Eric's transcripts. So what kind of advice would you have for these kids, whether they want to go into business or something completely different, as accomplished as you are? What advice would you have for them as they go on to this next phase of their lives?
Well, I mean, first of all, if you could take what you're passionate about and turn that into a career, that's probably the most fulfilling, right? And there's a lot of opportunities to do that. And I get, I think strategically about what the next generation of business looks like. Obviously, using AI, obviously understanding all the mechanics of technology. But there's going to be a resurgence of physical businesses. Like, we have shortages of trades, plumbers, and electricians, and all these things that weren't sexy in all the technology booms. However, they're really high-paying jobs, and you can have a great life doing those things too. So don't ignore the trades because sometimes they could even be more profitable than being website designers or AI guys because not as many people were chasing those things. So think carefully about what you like to do. Don't ignore trades and things that aren't sexy from an AI point of view, because we need all those workers too. And especially as we reindustrialize the United States, those are very important positions. And so there's a lot of opportunity there, but don't ignore some of the basic things because those are going to be high-paying jobs.
Great advice. We can't thank you enough for taking the time to talk to us today. And thank you, because all of my edutainments in the very beginning were on a CTL device, because you guys had
Yeah.
a changeable camera, the only one. So
Yep.
yeah, so thank you so much, Eric. I'll end the meeting for all right now. And I appreciate all the students out there who emailed in questions and everyone who joined us. So thank you so much, brother.
Thanks, guys.